Twitter at Twitter. Happy New Year, happy 2024, and welcome to our first Orange County Workforce Development Board meeting of 2024. Hope everybody had a nice holiday season and had a restful time with family and friends. My name is Annalisa Lutz, and I'm truly honored to have been elected by colleagues to chair this board. And again, as a reminder, we may get interrupted at any moment by fire drill. So thank you for your flexibility in advance, and thank you all for being here on time. Truly appreciate your participation. You should have in front of you a file, or whether it's in paper or digitally, of the agenda. So call the meeting to order. We're gonna go ahead and start with the Pledge of Allegiance. Then we're gonna have one presentation with some bullet points and action items, information items, and then hopefully some discussion. We really want to have your feedback and input on things that impact our economic and workforce development work here in Orange County and in your industry. So really, we want to move more towards those types of conversations. So I'm going to ask, if I may, our vice chair to lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance, and the flag is right over there. All
right. Hands over your heart. Ready to begin.
Thank you so much. We'll go ahead and start with board member roll call for that. Yeah, sorry.
Gloria Alvarado?
Here.
Gordy Bautos?
Here.
Kathy Boyd?
Rob
Claudio?
Here.
Steve Curiel?
Here.
Mike Daniel?
Here.
Andrew Bonney?
Here.
Sherry Hanlam?
Here.
William Hewitt?
Here.
Rajesh Strong?
Here.
Annalisa Luke?
Present.
Doug Mangiani?
Here.
Carlos Morgan? Fox Ford?
Here.
And Randy Weber?
Here.
And we have one.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for that. Let's go ahead and see if there are any public comments. And if there are, each person can have it for 3 minutes. Are there any public comments?
No, there's no public comments.
Okay, here we go. Let's go ahead and move on to item 5 on the agenda. We thought this would be a nice time because it's a reset for so many reasons. It's a brand new year. We've got new teams, certainly new members on the board. Welcome, and we'll get to know a little bit more about each other. We thought it'd be great for us to just do some more introduction that we have, let's say, in 2023. We always like to start with who the people are on the board. So we'll go ahead and ask for introductions to state your name, the organization you're affiliated with, and perhaps how long you've been with this board, if you'd like. And then we'll go into mission and vision statement, and we'll go into the calendar that you all helped us regroup at the end of last year in 2023. Okay. So shall we go ahead and start from right over there? Raj, can I introduce yourself a little bit about your group and how long you've been with us?
Thank you, Annalisa. Good morning, everyone. My name is Rajesh Jha. I'm the founder and CEO of Sim Insights. We are a leader in virtual and augmented reality-based training. What else should I include?
How long have you been involved with the board?
1 month or
1 month.
3 months, I don't know.
Wonderful. Thank you for being here.
Hi, my name is Bill Hugh. I'm affiliated with the Melbourne Community College System. I've been with the college system for, 40 years, too many years. And I've been on this board since September.
Thank you.
And I'm George Boucheros. I'm affiliated with the Orange County Business Council. I've been on this board since November.
Hi, everybody. My name is Andrew Bachman. I work at Orange County United Way. I oversee our financial security programs, also workforce development, tax programming. And this is my first meeting.
Welcome.
Steve Curiel, principal at Hyde Beach Adult School. And this is, I think, my second year starting the second year.
I'm Mike Daniel. I run the Orange County Inland Empire Small Business Development Center Network, and I've been here for 2 years.
Good morning, I'm Rob Claudio, and I'm with the Employment Development Department Workforce Services Branch. Been with the department in March, it'll be 33 years. With this board, I lost track, it's either 16 or 17 years. But nice to see everybody, especially all the new members.
Absolutely. I am Annalisa Lukes. I am the co-founder and CEO of the Lux Network, which is a firm based in Orange County that works in about Southern California, and we raise money through private investment as well as government contracts and philanthropy, and we do marketing. And this is my sixth year on the board, and my first year as chair.
Good morning, Todd Stewart, Southern California Edison. I'm in our Economic Development Services Group. I've been with the company almost 20 years at Edison, doing almost the same thing. I love what I do here. I've been on this board. I'm like Rob, I've forgotten that it's been so long. It definitely outdates me, but I think about 10 or so years. I've been vice chair a couple of times, and look forward to meeting everybody, working together, and doing some great stuff this year. Thank you.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Gloria Alvarado, I'm the Executive Director of the Orange County Labor Federation. We represent about 270,000 members, 97 locals in Orange County. And I've been with the board, I think, 4 years. Wow. I'm blessed.
Yeah.
Yes. Thank you. Looking forward to working with everybody. Thank you.
Hello, everyone. Randy Wetmer. I'm a business agent for Iron Workers Local 416. I've been with the board for 9 months. I also am a delegate for Orange County Labor Federation and Los Angeles Orange County Building Trades.
Good morning, everybody. I am Sherry Hanna. I'm the regional director for State of California Department of Rehabilitation. We help people with disability to find employment. I've been in my role as regional director for almost 2 years. I've been with my department for 29, 30 years now. I started my role on the board since last year. So I'm looking forward to get to know everybody and see how we can collaborate together and find people employment.
Mm-hmm. Hi, Doug Mangione. I'm with the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers in Orange County. 441 is the number. What we do is we provide skilled and trained construction electricians to our signatory contractors that work here in Orange County. We have been in Orange County since 1928, so we are here a long time. We're not going anywhere. Our organization is also affiliated with the Orange County Labor Federation and the LA and Orange County Building Trades under that umbrella. But and I've been on the board with Rob, I think, since 2007 or 8. It goes way back. That's it. Electricians.
Good morning. Francis Biden. I'm the Assistant Director of the Workforce and Economic Development Division, Deputy Director of the Orange County Workforce Development.
Hello, everyone. Nancy Cook, Director of Workforce and Economic Development for the county, and then your Executive Director for the board.
Awesome. And we do have other folks, if you wouldn't mind just introducing yourself, if you're in the room, we want to make sure that you're is that okay?
My name is Annette Corey-Riddle. I'm the Vision Organizer for the Nancy Riddle, and I support Nancy Cook's work for official achievements.
Is there it's not just
good morning, everyone. My name is Kendall Tidwell, and I'm employment development. I work for employment development. I'm the manager for the site in Anaheim.
Hello, good morning. Jenna Sergio. I'm the deputy director for OC Community Services, which encompasses Office on Aging, Workforce and Economic Development, and Veteran Service Office.
Good morning. Renee Ramirez, director of Orange County Community Services, like Jenna said, aging, senior programs, veterans, and workforce and development.
And then Monica Gama, I work with OCCS Administration, and I facilitate meetings.
Excellent. So as many of you probably are aware, because you've gone through your ethics trainings, this board and this body is governed by the Brown Act. So there are limitations as to what we can say and what we can say per the Brown Act, and that's something that, you know, we just have to be all mindful of. But really do encourage everybody communicating and partnering together so we can all work together. So thank you for introducing yourselves. In terms of the what, I'm just going to go ahead and read what the Workforce, Orange County Workforce Development Board is based on the website. And so this is always a good reminder to share with us why we're here, spending our time. So the OCWDB says that in partnership with the Orange County Board of Supervisors, the Orange County Workforce Development Board, that is us, oversees Orange County's workforce development activities.
There we go.
Hi there.
Perfect timing.
Okay, we're stopping.
One time. All right.
All right, so you were talking about our mission, and I was just reading off the website about it. It's we do, and just as a reminder, as many of you know, and probably have learned over the last several months of meeting with us, that we work as a board in partnership with the Orange County Board of Supervisors, and we oversee, this body oversees Orange County's workforce development activities. And we establish programs in response to the workforce needs of Orange County. So the folks around the table are experts in their own right, in their own fields, and have that data. And that's why we really want to have more conversational and strategic types of conversations with you, certainly in our meetings. Many of you know that we, our board, designs and implements the programs and services for businesses, adults, youth, disabled workers, in accordance with our 5-year strategic local plan. And we also are the body, along with Orange Workforce Alliance and our regional organizer. We produce the SETS, Comprehensive Economic Development Strategy, that gets submitted to the state. So if you have any more questions about who we are, what we do, feel free to reach out to anyone. We have a website, workforce.ocgov.com. We can dig a little bit more into that. And in terms of, I know many of you who were here last year know that we did a lot of sort of brainstorming about a rebrand. And I was looking for a vision statement. I don't think I saw a vision statement, but I just want to share that, you know, we do believe that this is what I believe. This is just my own opinion, that this is like a four-legged stool, right? We've got our board as one part of that stool, kind of like that chair with four legs. We have our staff, along with our service providers, as another component. The Board of Supervisors is another component, and then the public. The public is the largest component of that. That includes the folks and the businesses that we represent, the job seekers, the educational system, nonprofits that provide services that supplement and help with the economic and workforce development component. So it's a lot of those pieces, and I, for one, feel really, really honored to be here as part of the team. So thank you all for being here again. Let's go ahead and move on to item 5C, which is the 2024 calendar. You might recall if you were at the last meeting, was that in November? We used to have 4 meetings, board meetings in a year, and we decided as a team, got your feedback, when that lasts, that we wanted to hopefully have shorter meetings, but have them more frequently. And again, with the goal of having more strategic types of conversation. And that all is based on the feedback that we get from you. You all should have received calendar invitations, actually between November and now. If you haven't, just let us know. But our next meeting will be in March. Forgive me, I have the exact date, but it's in March. And this meeting today is sort of a level set, and we're going to talk more about who, what, when, where, why. And then in March, we will visit in the California Workforce Association Executive Director, who will kind of give us another level set conversation about who we are as a team, as a body, as a group, and then with a tag on for strategic planning. Am I saying that all right? That's true. Anything else, Nancy, that you'd like to share about the calendar? Okay, great. We'll talk about it later, but also in the calendar or in your packet are the annual conference. We'll discuss that a little bit later. So that is that. We're going to item 5. Are there any questions or comments from board members about this item? Yes. Yes.
We got the calendar. Are we going to revamp the committee?
Yes.
We knew that. Now that
good questions. So that is actually one of the things that we discussed in November is we want to spend January and February figuring out who the who are. So we have a very good idea who the who are. We do still have some vacancies. I've got my roster here if you want to put that as part of the report later on so that the team can help us recruit even more members. So our ask of each member of the board is to think through which of the standing committees you would like to be a part of. And we'll have more conversation around that. There's the youth committee, there's the business services committee, and then what I'll call is the one-stop agency. Am I saying that? Correct me if I'm wrong, but
the operating
committee. So think about what which of those you would like, and if you need more information about what the charters are or what the purposes are the committees reach out, myself, or Nancy, or anyone on the team. And our intention is by the March meeting, we will have all of the committee members lined up and figured out. According to our bylaws, the chair is supposed to appoint them, but you know, if we want your feedback, we want you to choose what you think is best so that you're the most engaged. And if for some reason there hasn't been a choice, then we can have a conversation and we can do the appointments as needed. Does that answer
your
question? Yeah, absolutely.
And the only thing that I would like to add about the committees is that our discussions in the board tend to be a little bit more general, more broader with the strokes, and the committees do a lot more deep diving. So that's where you would get into more of the specific statistics and data related to either performance or any of our other things that we decide upon as a board. So just so you know that there is that sector.
Any other comments, questions? Okay, we're going to move on to, we have four action items. So every so often, if not every meeting, you will see sometimes as we move our newer team members, policies that go in front of us, and we have to review them, discuss the limit, and then decide on approval process. And you will probably find in your packets, red line items, and that's something that is required so that you know what the original language was and what it's been changed. So at this point, I'm going to turn it over to our director, Nancy, to lead us through the action item 6-9.
Thank you, Chair. For item number 6, we are recommending the review and approval of an updated policy regarding on-the-job training. Just a brief overview of the request to board members that we met. The highlights are we updated the sections with all of the TEGL. The living wage was updated from $18 to $23.66 as of 2023. We updated the contract to be reimbursement payment at the conclusion of training versus monthly. But we did define that the training hours should not exceed a certain number in the template for the contract. So those are the major changes to that policy, Chair.
Thank you so much for that presentation. I'll go ahead and entertain a motion and then a second, and then we can discuss it. Paul, so Phil, is there a motion to approve? By Bill, is there a second?
Second
by Rob. Okay, let's go ahead and discuss. Are there any questions, comments, thoughts? And the packet does go, it's got a lot of attachments, I think, for the 16th and the
17th. Right. I have a quick question. Why did they change from monthly to at end of completion of training for the region?
So we kept the monthly check-ins to make sure that the candidate is making progress towards the goal, but to reduce like dropping out and having to pay before they've completed the total training, we moved it to the conclusion.
More of an incentive to stay on
track.
Correct.
Makes sense.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So if I understand this correctly, this is a policy that's the umbrella that will drive all the OJTs?
Yes, sir. Yeah.
I have a question, and this is probably just a medical. It's page 4, which is the first page, first paragraph. We've stuck out Community Investment Division, CIB, and the Workforce and Economic Division,
Correct.
Development Department, WEGB. Is there a missing D? Does it put say Workforce and Economic Development?
It is. Department? We will make that change. Okay, cool. Thank you, Chair. So throughout the document, we did update the county division of Community Investment Division to Workforce and Economic Development Division.
What are we basing the living wage on? Is there a report?
Yeah, so the living wage, it actually comes out. This is the Department of Human Services. Sorry, the Department of Human Services defines that, and it's an annual thing that is updated. And based on that, we actually have a policy, I think it's policy number, action item number 9, which kind of defines where that little wage comes from. But it's sent out every year, so we're updating that number.
I have a follow-up question to Andrew's question as well. How does the living wage increase on this policy impact potential employers trying to partner and get this on-the-job training policy?
So it's more so for like for our youth participants, they need to have a barrier, right? So livable wage like would be one of those barriers. So this is basically it qualifies participants as opposed to this. It doesn't really impact the employers. Mm. It is still the eligibility for the youth. And they have to meet one of the criteria. They have to have a barrier. That's just one of the ones which they could use to qualify.
Would you say that a little more offensive? So, the employer isn't bound by the...
It doesn't impact the employer so much. It's more of a qualification for the youth participant. So we're using youth program funding to fund this. So for us to be able to use that, the participant needs to be eligible. And so it could be used as one of the eligibility criteria for the youth.
Got it. Yeah.
So it doesn't really impact the employer at all. It doesn't affect their operations.
Okay. Francis, could you tell us what is an OJT provider and who are they up in there?
Currently, I believe we have four who we're working with. We're continuing soliciting and looking for them. We're looking for those employers who are going to provide that on-the-job training, right, where it's a win-win. So a youth participant can come in there and learn skills of that occupation. And we're helping to by subsidizing the cost of those wages. So it's a win for the employer because they're getting subsidized wages. And then the youth is learning the skills of the job and hopefully at least a full time employment.
Oh, the provider is just an employer.
Yeah. Yep.
Go ahead.
So let me ask you, if we have four, can you give me the idea of what those four training programs are like?
I can get you that.
Okay.
Quick question. Did I read it correctly that the OJT program that we currently have can also be, for lack of a better word, layered with or combined with apprenticeship model? Did I read that and interpret that correctly? And they both work together in parallel?
That's the idea, right? Okay. To create the pathway and the opportunities to mix and match the OJT plus the pre-apprenticeship model that Kathleen is
doing. Is there a limited time?
Yeah, there are hour caps. So I believe it's 2080 is there. Sorry, I believe it's 2008 work hours is work caps. That
2080 hours.
Yeah, I believe so. 6 months.
That's
okay. And yes.
So on the job training, I've heard this a long time, and I think we hear it different places used differently. So for this definition that we're approving is specifically for any WIOA. Under Orange County Workforce Development Board, Anaheim might have a different one. Anaheim might have different, or are they pretty much doing the same thing, aligning?
Similar.
Yeah, they're going to, because we align with the EDD directives. Okay. So there's also a line for the EDD directives, which then align with the federal TEGLs. Okay. So it kind of passes down. So they'll be very similar.
Gotcha. And just for everyone, TEGL is, we use a lot of acronyms. TEGL stands for, is it impactful?
Yeah. Just another clarification. So this OJT is not just for youth participants, it's anybody who qualifies as a candidate that the business could use. Right. So, I only heard you mention so. Right.
All right. So we've had discussion. We had a first and a second. Hearing no other discussion or questions, I'm going to call the question. All in favor of approving this revised OCWDB on the job training policy, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, motion carries unanimously. All right, so I'm going to turn to the next item, item seven, which starts on page 88 of your packet, 88-89 of your packet. This is regarding selective service registration policy. I'm going to turn it over to you.
Thank you, Chair. Our recommendation is for the board to review and approve the updated selective service registration policy. The red line starts on 78 of your packet, and the clean version is on page 88. The major changes made to this policy were updates to the division name, the contacts, and the submittal for review to the director and the board. Those changes are on page 85.
Great. I'll entertain a motion and a second, and then we'll discuss. Is there a motion to approve this revised policy?
I'll move it.
Moved by Doug. Is there a second? Second by Gloria. Okay. Go ahead and discuss. Any questions, comments, Doug? Okay. Yes, that's George. Ron,
just maybe if somebody can say a few sentences about what is selective service.
Yeah, okay.
So to one of the criteria for an adult or a dislocated worker program participant, so that's one of our funding streams is for adult dislocated workers. They've got some criteria, right? They have to have right to work, they have to be 18 years or older. And if they're a male, they have to have registered for selective service. So what this policy addresses is that requirement to have registered for selective service. Now, is in extenuating circumstances where maybe someone was out of the country between the ages of 18 and 25, so was not able to register for selective service, there is a form which they can submit to our staff, to Nancy for approval, to like go that requirement. But it does have to be in extenuating circumstances. It can't be, you can't use ignorance as I didn't know I had to register. There actually has to be a viable reason as to why not. But it's a program requirement. So in order to be able to be enrolled in the adult dislocated worker with WIOA programming, if you're a male between the ages of 18 and 25, you had to have registered in selective service.
And interesting though, if you never registered for selective service, but you joined the military and served honorably, you have to apply for a waiver,
correct.
Which is always struck me as bizarre. They didn't sign up for selective service, which is the draft, but they joined the military. They have to put a waiver in. That's why they didn't do selective service. Government in action.
And you heard another acronym, WIOA. You probably saw that in the package. Thank you for that background. Any comments, questions, anything else?
Could you one more time go over the major change in that policy?
Right. So the major change in the policy is on page 85. Get that, yep. Other than the little updates on the grant account, department. It is to request that the summers grant receive, so the case manager for them to receive the selective service applicant and then forward it to the OWA staff.
So if you went to apply and you never signed up for selective service, you would not be eligible to receive federal WIOA money. That's where it comes in. We've had some apprentices we have sent down to get support services, and they never signed up for selective service, which a lot of people don't, and they are not eligible for federal grants.
So what this does is it adds a vetting process instead of submitting directly to the board or to myself. The case manager has to kind of vet it and then submit it forward.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep, sure.
Okay. All right, I'll go ahead and call the question. All in favor of approving the OCWD selective service registration policy as updated, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, motion carries unanimously. We're going to move on to item 8, OCWDE self-sufficiency policy. It has a little bit of background and then talk about the major changes.
Thank you, Karen. Our recommendation is for the board to review and approve the updated self-sufficiency policy. The red line begins on page 98 of your packet. The major update and the clean version starts on page 102. For this policy, the major updates were to update the policy reference. As you can see under references, CFR Art 680.210. And then on the following page was the house updated household income reference. That's
what page did that start on?
On 98.
Yeah, so we just had to update this because of the references in place mainly. So because the lower living standard income and poverty line numbers had all been updated, we needed to update this because this is referring to that.
The major difference is currently it was hourly rate, and so we did a household.
I'll entertain a motion to approve and a second, and then we'll discuss your motion.
Moved
by Rob.
I'll second.
Second by Doug. Discussion.
Does this correlate at all with the CalWORKs eligibility for low income?
I can't speak to CalWORKs.
Yeah, nice. Period. Yeah.
We can check on that for you.
Just curious, yeah. Could we deal with them too? And is if we update and we want us to.
I mean, it's a federal standard, so likely.
Yeah, and I see it mentions TAN staff, so You would hope so.
Yeah.
So we don't have to keep track of two different things.
We can confirm and get back to you.
Okay. Thank you. Yeah, okay. What was the motivating reason to change it from hourly rate to household income in your assessment for the policy?
To align with the updates that came out. That's how they determine it.
Updates for?
From the
poverty rates.
Oh,
so the different poverty rate tables, that's how they're outlined. So we want to make sure it
works. The next.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so basically this policy and then the next policy that we'll be reviewing work in tandem.
Okay. Thank you.
And just to clarify, page 99, this came up earlier, the living wage, it gives you item number one and number two towards the top of where that information is obtained to. If you wanted to follow, I always think of Harvard that it's MIT. but that's the living wage calculator that a lot of them use, but it comes from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Aside from all that, the living wage in Orange County is just, what they publish and what their formula says. We all know that the reality is very different.
Yeah.
Thank you,
guys. Good point. Any other discussion around this? All right, seeing none, we're going to go ahead and call the question. Any all in favor of approving OCWD self-sufficient policy as drafted by Scott, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
Thank you.
Okay. Wasn't calling for abstentions, but motion carries now. Last action item, item 9, OCWD 70% lower living standard income level and poverty guidelines policy, which starts in about 102. Nancy,
our recommendation is for the board to review and approve the updated 70% lower living standard income level and poverty guideline policy. The red line begins on page 102. And the clean version begins on 105. For the background, we did update the purpose of the eligibility policy on page 103. We referenced and updated the web address where the memo will be posted publicly, listing the tables. And on page 108 and 109 is the adjusted table.
Yeah. Thank you for that background. I'll entertain a motion. The second we'll discuss. Your motion to approve them. Moved by Randy. Third second. Second by Kathy. Any discussion? Have a question. So theoretically, because U.S. Housing Department of Urban Development, but changes it every year. So we have to do this every year as a standard. I can't remember the
correct answer.
Okay.
Yeah. And then we'll update the memo and post it until after your approval.
Any other questions, discussion? Mm-hmm. Okay, seeing here none, I'll go ahead and call the question. All in favor of approving OCWD 70% lower living standard income level poverty guidelines policy as drafted, say aye.
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 Any opposed? All right, motion carries unanimously. Thank you. Wonderful. Thank you for having us go through those action items quickly. We're at 11:02. Okay, we've got six informational items, and then we have some time for any open discussion. I'll go ahead and turn over the annual conferences over to our director, Nancy Cook. There is a calendar as well in your packet that discusses upcoming conferences. Nancy.
Thank you, Chair. On page 112 of your packet. 112 of your packet is a list of the annual conferences that we recommend for have workforce related content. We did, with Epichair's suggestion, we did go through our budget and see how many people that we might be able to support and send. So we can get you that information if you're interested. The most recent one coming up is the youth conference. That deadline is rather short. The closing date is the 2nd, I believe. So if you have interest, we can see how we could support that. Generally, we would send one staff, 1 to 2 staff, and 1 to 2 board members if the budget permits.
Let's see. So there's no action item on this. This is, again, informational. I'll just
here is someone who was able to attend the Washington AP conference last year. It was really wonderful to have met so many practitioners, board members, professionals from all over the nation. Even though some out of California happy hour, but end up with Florida, Indianapolis, Washington, and different ways of doing things, wonderful experience like that. And there was a regional conference as well.
Which I attended. Yes. I attended the California Workforce Association in San Diego meeting, and it was a really amazing conversations, focusing in the just transition and new job, the future jobs. But also one of the biggest things that they talked about is how we're going to be able to promote good paying jobs with the money that is coming in, right? The SERF, they talked about SERF and other grants that are coming in. So it was very informative. I encourage for us to continue going and making sure that we are connecting with them. Thank you.
And then, well, I'll add, I mean, I attended NAV last year in Washington, D.C. Very informative. It's great to see the really big picture. And a lot of times you see similar problems, you know, upstate New York is having similar problems to Orange County, from Texas, you know, different states, and how people are tackling it. Last year's big topic, it was repeated over and over, was Sankar Tamura. Or not every entrepreneur, but exactly. And they had speakers not only on the subject from the US, but I believe it was Taiwan, Greece, and Ireland. So they kind of gave you like a worldwide, you know, picture of what was going on. So yeah, I certainly highly recommend it. Very informative. And two things, NAV has a website which also lists a lot of the webinars. And those, as members, you can participate. You know, like there's different topics at different times. Every month they host some type of webinar. Some of them are informational purposes that are related, could be related to the board. Some of them are very much related to what's going on in the economy. I participated, I believe, in a few. I think it was last year, the year before, when we were having the supply chain issues, there was a big conversation across the country of what were the boards doing to support, you know, moving that, you know, forward or helping the employers that were having all of these issues. So it was really interesting to hear what the different states were dealing with, but those are ongoing and you can all participate. You just log in and register on the NAV.org website, I believe. And CWA kind of does the same thing. They have monthly or ongoing either webinars or, you know, topics that you can participate in. Their website is actually calworkforce.org. It's not CWA. But you could take a look at their calendar too if you want to participate. For folks that it's difficult to get to a meeting in person, and particularly across the country. If you can click on a link, it's something that may be of interest to you. I would suggest that as well.
Thank you for that.
And on the subject of apprenticeships, we've had a lot of discussions in the construction trades. Construction trades have been doing formal apprenticeships for close to 100 years. You know, construction trades are very well-established apprenticeships. And what the federal government is starting to focus on is they're calling non-traditional apprenticeships. So even teachers, bankers, anyone else that relies on a college education to get a degree and then gets hired, they're looking at, why are we sending people to school for 4 years for nursing or teaching when we can do a basic introduction and then have them actually work with teachers, work with nurses, work with as assistants, which we do in the construction trades. We provide jobs for the apprentice. We train the apprentice, no cost to the apprentice. And so the apprentice is working, he's learning, earning. And that apprenticeship has been in existence for many, many years. It's very successful. We're responsible. We put money in every hour to train our future. We always have a ready supply of new people coming in. We don't rely on the colleges, community colleges. And I think the community colleges now are starting to look at some type of certifications coming out where you're trained to go into something, whether it's automotive, whether it's, you know, phlebotomist, whether it's this. You don't need the 4-year degree. We've got to get people out and into the workplace. They may not necessarily need the 4-year degree. But that's when they say non-traditional apprenticeship. there's a big focus on that.
Absolutely. I'll add in one point to that. It's on traditional and youth. So yeah. We, as from youth, you can even do it in high school now, 16 or older. So they have really opened up the doors for us to look at the example that traditional labor has set and create that for every industry sector. So in Orange County Department of Education, we did, I took advantage of it, and we have registered apprenticeships with the Department of Labor, which is a federal system. And then California has its own Division of Apprenticeship Standards. And we are still in the process of getting it registered in the state of California. The state asked us to do the federal apprenticeship first because the current non-traditional youth apprenticeship system in California was an hours-based system in order to qualify, and they would prefer it be both hours or competency-based, that it can be chosen by the people involved in the apprenticeship organization. So now that we in Orange County have done that with the federal, it has now changed to California. So you can do either or competency or hours based when it comes to the qualification of the apprenticeship, which is beautiful. So I happen to be a board member, but my full-time job is to take the heavy lift off of any employer in Orange County who wants to develop an internship for those empty pipelines, no matter what their business is. And we first initiated across 5 industry sectors. But now our second is going to be across the remaining industry sectors, not inclusive of the labor ones that already exist. We want to continue to maintain that as it is. But anything non-traditional or youth can be established at this point, and anybody can participate, and we can play as an integral part, taking the heavy lift out, or just a kind of site partner to help inform. So if you have more questions, I'm happy to answer those offline, but it is a really interesting time for us to let anybody in our area earn and learn, not just have to take money out of their pockets to upskill or initially skill.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes, Bill, and then Gloria.
She took some of the words right off.
Sorry, Bill.
No, that's fine. Well, that's what we're here for. Yeah. The idea of competency-based versus time-based has really changed the dimension of internships. But the thing that I was going to ask about earlier is, in all of these conferences, are there documents that are coming out that show best practices for certain programs in certain states and that kind of stuff that others can look at and see how we can either copy them or we can be proud that we're the ones that are doing it?
I can respond and Bob,
please.
You went to the NOB and I went to another conference as well. The one in DC does, and they actually use an app whereby you can connect with people, and they list their first name, their last name. I think the New Orleans did have one as well, not quite as packed as the DC one. And in that too are documents, PowerPoints and presentations, so that, because it's such a robust agenda, it's hard to figure out what you're going to go to.
Right.
So at least in my experience, yes, there was that. And then you have to figure out how do you then disseminate that to everybody, because there's a lot of content. It was a long conference. I think it was 4 full days, I think, in DC.
I was going to say CWA does the same thing for both of their conferences. The presenters, they all upload their PowerPoints or their presentations, and they send a link to the participants that you can access them. So if you didn't participate, I'm sure that Nancy or somebody on the staff could pull any of the information that you would be interested, because it would be heavy files. So rather than inundate you with them, if you ask them, I'm sure they can send you what's something that you would be interested in.
Or a brief one pager.
Which will get read.
Yeah, which I could read, you know. I went 10 years ago, there was more information than I could ingest in a year, you know, but all good stuff.
I just read an article the other day that goes to your point, Doug. Those people that are in four-year colleges that are majoring in teaching, elementary and secondary teaching, never see a classroom until after they graduate.
Right.
And the attrition rate from those people that graduate into those people who get the certifications, 63%.
Yeah.
63% of them drop out because they said, I don't like teaching, even though I majored in it for 5 years, 4 years. So it goes to your point.
And that's the thing with us. I always tell people, you know, you go to college, you train in A, but you didn't really like that, so you become B, and then maybe you get a job at C. Electricians, we train iron workers, we train electricians, and they become electricians for 30 years. You know, it's, you know, they know what they've gotten into, they know what they want to do, and we have people burned out. In a year or 6 months, they go, this isn't for me. That's why a lot of the trades have these, not even pre-apprenticeship, so lower wage other than the formal apprenticeship where they go in and work. And that's where you weed people out, because there are people that come to you and go, I love construction. And 2 weeks later, come back and go, man, I had no idea what this was about. Meanwhile, you didn't waste any time teaching them. They didn't waste their time. They could move on to their next venture, you know, without wasting some of the, and the teachers, my daughter was a teacher. They have to do the year or two afterwards, year and a half. That's when they start getting in classrooms and going, It's not what I signed up for. I thought I was going to be teaching kids and you're filling paperwork out.
So the reality needs to meet the expectation.
I wanted to add is that one of the discussions, and again, everything is electronic, which is great, so we can get it, was the just transition or apprenticeship, honoring the experience of those who have worked 20, 30 years in a specific job, honor that experience and then translate it to the upcoming jobs, whatever it is that is coming out of, especially with artificial intelligence. That was a big connection that needed to happen and still happening. So there's still discussions going on, but I think that's the kind of innovation that we need to bring and start thinking about for the future. Again, the youth, yes, the youth are gonna have all these services, but is the people that are not ready to retire yet or can retire yet, but are in between, you know, I want to say 35 and what is it, 67 retirement age right now. Those are the folks that we need to be able to reach and retrain and upskill.
That's a really good point. At the DOL panel in DC, we learned that they're going to need to be, oh gosh, I don't think I'm, what's going here. I think it's 9 million jobs over the next decade as a result of IIJ and IRA, which are two federal bills just got passed last year. And so transitioning to the youth, right, workers who are already skilled in a certain kind of technology, transitioning them over to renewables and other types of new technology. How do you make that happen while retaining the workforce, because they've got a lot of experience? And so all of these things are part of hopefully what we talk about here at this board level, and we have open discussion, because as you can tell, there's a lot of content. And while there are similarities from region to region, city to city, there are differences, big part of which is housing and the cost of housing in Orange County. So that really drives a lot of things that are different from Pennsylvania. I mean, it's changing, it's evolving, but you know, that's a big factor here in Orange County and Southern California in general. So love the robust conversation.
Like, I have a question for Kathy, actually. So you in your program, internship program, you have money to pay to the interns, or is it unpaid?
So there's internship and apprenticeship, and I just want to clarify that because those are very different things. Internship has always been around in more of an informal structure, and there's both paid and unpaid internships. The apprenticeship is this whole DOL, the federal government approving it, and DAS, the state government approving it. A structure around the earn and learn environment. Okay. Again, formal versus informal, but both have paid, and the apprenticeship also has to be paid, obviously. The payment comes from the employer. So the OJT and the payment comes from whoever that is. What's happening in California, and then hopefully soon to follow, well, not hopefully, it is soon to follow with federal government, is a lot of a set of money coming to states and to organizations to reimburse employers for the cost of having an apprenticeship. So the funding has already started in California, and it will be soon to follow at the federal level, so that it's not a total loss of funding for you to bring on apprentices because you have to find. I think the bigger models to think about is we have large companies, not necessarily medium, small size, but large companies have recruitment funds, and they use that for different reasons and do different kinds of things. If you were to kind of convert that into an apprenticeship model, you use those funds and you pay it through apprenticeship instead of paying an advertising agency or whatever the case may be. So you build your workforce yourself with an apprenticeship versus depend on the health tech service or an outsourcing service to build your service for your apprenticeship or your pipeline for you. But anyway, there's a lot to that. But the simplistic answer is it isn't a cost to the employer who chooses to bring on apprentice.
So, in construction, the incentive for our employers, construction is very hourly bid rated, cost of the job, the cost of labor, cost of materials, but the cost of labor, it was a certain percentage. So our employees, by having a lower wage helper, brings their hourly cost for the job down. So the incentive for them to support the apprenticeship, which they do, our apprenticeships are jointly administered between signatory contractors and labor. The incentive is not just they're good guys and golly, their incentive is we can lower their wage the journeyman makes up here. You have so many apprentices on the job, you lower that cost. And most construction people in electrical, we're the union apprenticeship, we're probably the biggest. But there are unrepresented or non-union apprentices, or sanctioned by the state, some not by the federal. We're federal and state, but they do the same thing. They have so many people on the job. They have a ratio of apprentices, and that's the incentive. So for a company like yours, it's sometimes hard to find the incentive to bring a trainee person on. Ours, it's built in. They're doing construction work. They're, a two-man job. There's a cheaper worker handing him stuff and working right with him. You know, whether that works in other industries is what remains to be seen. How can that person be, monetarily, an advantage to the company? Because basically, we're not all in this for altruistic reasons. We want to make a buck, but I think that's the challenge for some industries. Is how do you make that person viable from a monetary point of view?
If I can quickly.
Sure.
So in our industry, the skill level is very good deal, but we have organizations like National Science Foundation who are telling us, you can bring on a high school student. Mm-hmm. And so I met with Kathy last year, and we are really looking to connect with organizations like yours and share yours and some of yours to build the bridges, because we are engineers, we are very deep in the tech stuff, but we know that there are a lot of things where we can welcome IVC students, high school students, RUBCI interns, every stage. So I just wanted to share that.
Let me add one more thing. There are a lot of grant dollars. So I talked about my reimbursement funding, which is there and still coming. But right now, that's why you're seeing grant funding around the word apprenticeship. So that it provides companies seed funding initially to pay for the apprentice. You don't have to take it out of your pocket right away, and then work through those challenges of how do we sustain this. And then the other, I was at a Samuel and dinner last night for Orange County, and there's large philanthropic organizations in Orange County that we probably should be investing in from a conversation perspective, who don't understand the complexity of what we're talking about. But if we were to explain to them that it would be helpful in businesses if they had this apprenticeship seed funding so that it wasn't, a personal cost to the business, I think we would have a lot of success in using philanthropic money towards these endeavors as well.
So just one quick comment. So
Walton
Family Foundation is a large one. And they flew me and my team out to NYC. So we should definitely talk about it.
Great. So really appreciate all that feedback. I want to make sure that we are staying on track and we end on time, if that's okay. I encourage you to continue having conversations. We have some kind of roster. Make sure you connect with one another. Okay. I think, Bill, you have to excuse.
I have a doctor.
Okay. Thank you so much for being here.
Very good conversation. I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Very productive.
So let the minutes reflect, Mr. Hewitt, 11.2. Okay, at this point, let's go ahead and move on to information item number 11, our regional organizer update from Annette Whittle. As many of you may know, we have three workforce development boards in Orange County, covering all 34 municipalities. We have this Orange County, we've got Santa Ana, and we've got Anaheim Workforce Development Board. And Annette is our multi-board regional organizer.
So I am the regional organizer. I serve Santa Ana, Marco Lucero, and Deborah Sanchez. I'm sorry. Marco Lucero is with Anaheim, Deborah Sanchez with Santa Ana. So they're all three directors. There's 15 of us throughout the state of California. So there's 15 regional planning units, and there's 45 boards that matter. Okay.
So my role is really as the regional organizer is to one, oversee kind of the implementation of the regional plan and to work with our workforce development boards and our regional partners to advance the items that are in there, which include, amongst many things, you know, strategies for training, which one of them would be apprenticeship programs, and amongst a slew of other things that really involve industry sector engagement with our employers, as well as ensuring that there's a talent pipeline that is available for these employers and working with our educational partners to ensure that. So just a few updates. Last year, we submitted our biannual update to the regional plan that went to the state back in June. Time flies. State is currently working on the next plan. So they received the guidance from the Department of Labor. And so they're working on their plan now. It's currently open for public comment up until February the 15th. So they've written it, it's open for public comment, which pretty much means that we need to kind of get into the mode of working on our regional and local plans again, although I feel like we just closed much after it feels like it. So we will probably see guidance maybe around September. If we're lucky, sometimes the state's pretty late. They may release like a draft in June. So at that point in time, we'll probably start trying to really look at that and see what we need to do and be ahead of the game. We have to get those plans through two councils and the board of supervisors. So we need lots of leeway time to make that all happen and get those to the state compliant. So if you want to take a look at that state plan, it is posted on the California Workforce Development Board's website. It's a large document. I will just say that. So, you know, when you're bored at night and laying in bed, it may be a good read. I will start to go through it because it's important for what we need to do as far as our regional and local plan. We've typically in the past have had some three board convenings. We will have another one later on this year. We'll probably make it in line with what we need to do as a part of the regional plan, which would be to convene the boards and have other community events that basically allow them to provide some input into our plans. So probably September, October, a little bit down the way. So we have a ways for that. We have two regional grants going on right now. We have the regional plan implementation 5.0 grant, and we have the regional equity recovery program grant. Sometimes you'll hear it called WERP. That'll be one of the acronyms that you may hear. These plans fund, one, the regional organizer positions throughout the state of California. In the case of the regional equity recovery program, this is the one grant that the state funded last year that includes funding from the chancellor's office for the community colleges. So they put in $10 million, and this is a partnership grant between the workforce development boards and our community colleges. We were required to submit a joint application that included projects that went to the state. The chancellor's office funded part of the projects, and then we have the state of California that funded the other part of the projects. And in this grant, it's the first time that we are responsible for actually serving participants at the regional level. So typically that funding is all done through WEAL at the board level. So, but in conjunction with our community college partners, we do have some programs that we are currently working on. They're in various stages. So some are actually developing the program itself. Some are up to the races, and we are currently working with Saddleback, North Orange County Community Continuing Education, and Santa Ana College and Coastline College. So I will share more as I have more details on that. A little bit challenging in our school systems, they have lots of vacation and things like that. And so we have to work around it, and they have some very hard times where they start. And so those are some of the things that we are trying to really work on, our coordination between our community colleges. As a part of that, we have had four sessions where we have had collaboration meetings between the three Workforce Development Board staff members, as well as representatives from each of the community colleges that have come together around coordination. Getting programs on our eligible training provider list, which is where those programs need to land for us to be able to spend Workforce Innovation Opportunity Act funding on, as well as our referral coordination between the community colleges and the Workforce Development Boards. And we are also looking at business engagement. How do we do that collectively in a way that we are not annoying our businesses and that we are providing value to them? So that is one thing that I am really wanting to see more alignment through our county. And we've been having these conversations, and all of our educational partners have either a requirement or a desire to work with businesses. It's one of the two, you know. So we are making progress in that regard. It's just lots of conversations and communication on how we might do that better. I think that collectively we can cover more territory, get out to more businesses, and let them know about the services that we have to offer, and really just add value to what it is that they need. If we really listen and partner with them, not listen and go away and ask you to come back next year, but really listen and partner, go back, look at our programs, try to adjust, and keep the ongoing feedback going with them. So as the three boards, we've decided to focus on information technology sector this year to really put all of our effort behind one industry. We're trying to launch in four industries and make that very successful, and then duplicate that, learn from it, and duplicate that into our other industry sectors. Any questions?
What would be the success measures around that particular?
So for our four industry sector partnerships, success measures, really, I'm going to go back to our indicators. So for the state of California, our indicator around industry sector is how we communicate with industry and our partners. We are currently looking at some things as to how many people are we training in industries. So that is a project amongst the three boards that we have to put together exactly how we are going to measure that. So we are looking at various things, and we kind of started that work in some of our good data chamber when we had our workforce development board meeting. So we're indicator A. So it's the region has a process to communicate industry workforce needs to supply sites harvest. So we are working on the benchmarks to measure and track that. Some of the things is individuals placed in jobs that align with the sector strategies and occupations that are emphasized in the regional plan. And then target sectors include they're basically advanced manufacturing, healthcare, information technology, and retail, hospitality, tourism. But we are going to put all of our effort amongst one right now. We really want to just see if we can get that. I shouldn't say see. I'm convinced that, you know, with everyone aligned in one place and really just putting all of our resources behind what it's a heavy lift, you know. But we have some strategies as far as really engaging our businesses. So first, you know, really telling them about the services that the workforce development boards have to offer through business services, introducing them to the system, and then trying to really start engaging them, then ask them out on a date, and then ask them the next step. A lot of times we're picking up the phone and we ask them out on a date, they're going, huh, who are you? Right? So we're gonna try a little bit different method and really start by recording first.
So we have 19 members of the board, right, from 21. I'm trying to figure out, as a call to action, would one way that, how can we support you? Would it be essentially referring people to Nancy to introduce them to the OWA system and seeing what there might be, and that way you can take it away and introduce more and get them hooked in the dating process? Would that be a
specific? Definitely, we are looking for those champions within industry, right? So industry like industry, right? So that's if the ask really comes from another person who is really a business individual.
No, I was just...
Okay, so another business individual, that could be, if for ICT, digital media, information technology, it doesn't necessarily have to be, I should say industry, but that does cross many industries, right? So, but we do need business champions. We need other businesses that will step up to the plate and say, hey, yes, I will make the ask. It comes, if we get a better response from business to business ask versus what they see in this media as government, sometimes your business, something like that. But, so,
and I just want to offer up the, a strategy that I think we should have you embed when you're looking at reporting and measurements, like she mentioned before, is we do have the K-16 projects that are inclusive of actual specific businesses and colleges, and then also K-12, which I know is not important for this. But at least let me give you that data because it started a couple of years ago and you have specific businesses at the table, and those are very quantifiable career measures on work-based learning outcomes. That I think if you drew the connection with your current community college partners to the K-16 projects they're on in the ICT arena, I think that'll give you a really nice, like, hit the ground running as far as measurable things that'll be easy to report out. So feel free to contact me later. I'll give those to you.
Okay.
Wonderful.
No, I know. And I were talking in the parking lot kind of about how we would engage these. And one of the thoughts I had was, can we put together some data of some of the results we've had in these key industry clusters? You know, how many OJTs have we done? How many placements? How many upskill, you know, and all those kind of things, just to sort of warm up our dates, right? Like, yes. Say, hey, we're worthy of your time. This is what we do, and we want to do it more.
Yes, and we did, the three boards looked at basically what areas they were training in. For us to make the decision on which industry sector we were going to kind of really put our force behind. And it really was between healthcare and information technology. Those were the top two. Decided kind of information technology because it was a little bit, I want to say acceptable in some ways, right? I can get to probably the CEO of somebody in information technology faster than I can at the hospital. So that's a partial reason, and then also looking at just who are the contacts that we have now. So we're gonna.
And like you said, IT is one of those functions that it's industry
everywhere.
So you get the IT person or the head of IT at hospital, now you're covering healthcare.
Yeah.
So, awesome.
Maybe we can put together a list of all these major companies in the areas and through our networks.
We are definitely gonna we're starting with some our contacts that we have, but we are also trying to introduce new people into the system.
And then I would add I know our labor market researcher from ADP, we produce some report called Help Wanted Online. And we do top 10 jobs, top 10 employers in every city in Orange County. And that gets produced monthly, and I send it out to the boards. We are on our side are tasked with how many of those employers and how many of the jobs that are getting listed are we actually listing in our own CalJob system, because that's how I measure our success. In every single report, I would say IT and IT-related jobs are probably 4 out of the top 10. So I'm glad that the focus is on that, because I've mentioned it to this board and other boards before. We do really well in identifying the 4 industry sectors, but when it comes to how many people did we place in a job in an IT industry sector, the numbers are going to be really small. I know. And so, yeah, so I think I used my opportunity to be part of the regional community colleges conference, I think in December. Yes. And so it just so happens that one of the people that was next to me, he asked me to take a picture because he didn't have anybody from his company with it. So I said, okay. But then I found out he actually is the CEO of IT cybersecurity, and he owns 2 companies. So I was able to get that information. I briefly talked to him about, you know, hey, we need people like you on our board. And so I sent the information to Nancy, and then Nancy did follow up. And
So what I think we submitted an application. And so that's kind of, you know, part of the work I think that we do on the outside of,
right.
of being on this board is to use those opportunities when you, you know, end up, yeah. And then when you see that they're coming from this industry sector, that we would like to hear their voice as part of, you know, the decision-making process. That's certainly what we would aim for.
You're all ambassadors. Thank you so much for your presentation.
Thank you.
All the best. Okay, thank you for that. Item 12, performance update, program year 2024, and Q1 and 2.
Thank you, Chair. On page 113 is your new performance dashboard. With the guidance of the chair and the vice chair and the board members that I was able to meet, it's the one page of that.
Yes.
So we consolidated it to a high level overview.
Beautiful.
And then
love it.
Thank you.
That's great.
You created it. And so we'll back it up with some data. So I plan to just walk over the overall data, provide you some success stories that can connect kind of the numbers to the work that we're doing, and then dive into kind of the training trends and open it up to discussion, if that's okay. So the overall visitors to the center, this is not a duplicate, it's not an unduplicated number. So it's just the count of how many people are accessing this number. The 6,109 is a combination of the Brea and the Laguna broken down below under center stats. The regional work, these are the programs that Annette mentioned and the core areas that they're covering. So with Saddleback College, they're focusing on the medical laboratory technician. Coastline College is doing two for us, one in cybersecurity, one in supply chain management, so logistics. North Orange County Continuing Ed is doing Amazon Web Services focus, and then Santa Ana College is working on an intro to IT. There's a lot of IT focus there. The employees served, that 203 is counting more the smaller hiring events, the OJTs, the WECs, the business services that we're providing directly to employers. Not counted in there are the career fair employers. That's more of a general, so we couched it differently. So we had two major career fairs in the quarters, July 1st through December 31st, so the first two program year quarters. The employers were 42 and 187 job seekers at the first job fair. And then the recent one in November for District 5, we had 70 employers and 189 job seekers. If you'd like more detailed stats with that, please feel free to reach out. For programs, for the adult and dislocated worker programs, we're on track. Again, this is an annual goal versus the two quarters from July 1st to December 31st. And in there, you can see the context. For the success story for the adult and dislocated worker programs, I have two examples. We had an Air Force veteran who encountered obstacles reintegrating into the workforce. Particularly, he was interested in pursuing a career in building and safety. He faced long-term unemployment and exhausted his unemployment benefits. So with the assistance of our case manager, we put him in some interview preparation classes, resume building, and enrolled him with the Tierney Center to kind of leverage funding. So all those efforts, he was able to secure a position at Hoke Hospital as a safety and disaster coordinator, earning $41 an hour.
That's amazing.
The second example also involves a veteran working with a dislocated program. He was separated from services, actively looking for employment, but unable to kind of put forth what his mission was. So met with a caseworker, kind of really focused on what he was looking for. They enrolled in ITA, so with one of the policies that you approved here at the board, enrolled in Security Analyst 3 training, and was offered a job at completion with Mantech. And his salary over the year is $96,000. So that's more than just an entry-level job. Moving back to the youth enrollments on your one-page dashboard. So I have the number of total in-school and out-of-school there. Combined, our youth performance is on track. And then there's some median earning information. For a success story, we have a youth who entered a program as a high school dropout. They face challenges earning their diploma and then other personal barriers. So we enrolled them with the John Muir Charter School, and kind of leverage that and increase their work experience to give them employable skills. And while they were attending class and doing work experience, our business services unit had a hiring event for Bibby. And so that individual was hired for full-time employment as managing the evening classes. Also for youth, you'll see right under the California Job Challenge graduates, we had 34 graduates through our Ready Set OC program, and they earned industry certificates. So the industry certificates are here: welding, automotive technology, construction, pre-apprenticeship, and certified nurse assistant. Moving over to the hiring events, on the very far right, we served 759 job seekers, 173 employers. And then for layoff aversion, that's a little bit different from the hiring events. We're responding to warm notices of businesses that will be doing mass layoffs. And so we've assisted 28 businesses with warm notices, and then 1,778 job seekers. For business services, a layoff aversion, we assisted Lower Dempsey with upskilling 20 of their employees so that they could work a specialized printer that involved speed resulting competitive products. I'm not sure what it is.
But it's sounded pretty good.
It sounded pretty good. All right. So these 20 employees retain their position and can elevate kind of their earnings and keep that job. For the hiring support, for Disney, they reached out to fill 15 available positions. We had 39 job seekers that we coordinated with career services that seemed to fit. Of the 39, they conducted 25 interviews and hired 11 on the spot at the event. Additionally, 10 more were referred out for follow-up interviews. And so those positions covered culinary, merchandise, steward, bar person, and the salary range was $19 to $21.
Right.
As far as business engagement, you'll see below, we have an EMT career exploration with Anaheim. So in partnership with the Anaheim Workforce Development Board, kind of taking a little bit of a different track, working a little bit off of Kathy's, like, you know, we got to expose them. So it's not really a hiring event. It's more of a career exploration for the youth. We're bringing out an ambulance. They're going to get to see the machinery, talk to the EMTs and firefighters. So we have that. As far as business engagement, which is kind of captured in the 203 that we are served, we attend a small business City of Tustin clinic. And one of the business owners they met was Ms. DeVal, who has a small floral studio. I think that means flower shop, right? Mm-hmm. Floral studio in Tustin. But she was looking to expand but didn't have the resources. So we assisted her with 2 work experience opportunities, and she was able to hire a receptionist and a floral designer. So that's kind of my major report out of data. I'd like to dive into the highlights of the training, the top 3 trainings that we have assisted with, kind of tracks with our industry sector: IT trainings, healthcare support, and truck driving. So the truck driving, let's see here. I'm getting old. The healthcare trainings, the nursing assistant program, nurses, the cost is $2,800, and it's a 4-week program. And the median expected earnings after the training is $40,000. For the IT medical billing, the training is $8,395, and the expected median earning after it is $44,000. The professional truck driving training program is $5,995, and the expected median earning is $51,000. Needing glasses. So that's my performance report out. Thank you so much for guiding kind of the development of it, and open to suggestions.
Thank you so much for packaging this together. Enjoyed it all on one page, an infographic. Really nice, and thank you for sharing the stories as well. That is just really wonderful to have the data and the story, and they match up and they line up. Good job, everybody. Thank you for making that happen, and with that, really appreciate it. Let's do a quick time check. We're at 11:48. Real quickly, we've got 3 items just for informational purposes.
Let's go ahead and move on to item 13, previous meeting minutes in the packet. You want to just
this was the rescission file.
Wonderful, great, thank you. Let's go ahead and move on to item 14, which is my report for the 2023 year. First of all, I'm going to say that the chair that we had over the last few years, Carrie Hollingsworth, who is a VP at the Hospital Association of Southern California, served us really well. So thank you, Carrie, for that. Really appreciate her dedication, her time through times of transition, even including but not limited to a pandemic. So that's quite something. So a lot of what I'm looking back on is a team effort, right? So I just get to deliver this on behalf of everybody, but it all is based on what the staff has done and board members. So I'll go ahead and start off. We've got, did you know that we received 3 awards? We have 2 new grant awards and then a couple of updates when it comes to operations. I'll start with the operations. And so under new team, we all know we've got a new director, Nancy Cook. We met thank you again to the team for fast tracking that. That was an incredible, incredible process. Thank you. So happy that you're here, along with any other members who may have joined us. If that's super significant. Not on my list, but obviously the Brea facility that was open. I don't know if you were there, the open house, 40,000 square feet. In addition to this one, major wins, right? So incredible to get anything done, much less moved and done so seamlessly from feedback from Rob in the past. Under business services, the team brought the business services in-house instead of contracting them out. As many of you may be aware, we do have service providers within the contract, and then we have staff who perform the services as well in-house. We also developed a robust unit to focus on career fairs, as noted in the infographic. Targeted recruiting events and assistance to our business community. And as all, we are ambassadors, we can all continue to share that good news and help us get the word out about this board and the value that we have in this county. I'll go ahead and get started with the grant awards. We've got 2 grant awards. I say one bullet point was 2 sub-bullet points. We have a Reaching Inclusive and Sustainable Employment in OC, RISE OC. So I'll just read this for a bit. In June of 2023, the California Workforce Development Board, which is a state version of our regional workforce development board, and they work with the 45 boards, awarded the County of Orange / Orange County Workforce Alliance, that's the 3 boards, OWA, the Regional Equity and Recovery Partnership Work Grant. I think that was something that Annette mentioned earlier, and that is for $1.3 million. And this is running through October 31, 2025. And this again, is, as Annette mentioned, is to accelerate and deepen the existence of regional plan implementation activities so that we are working collaboratively as the 3 boards per our commitment to the state. The target populations on that grant are English language learners, immigrants, and first-generation college students. 185 individuals are to enroll, 80% to obtain credentials and certificates, 70 to gain employment with a wage of $28.02. So congratulations on that award, and thank you for your help. And then, last but not least, 3 awards and recognitions that you all made happen. Okay, first is the California Workforce Association Champion of the Year for 2023. Did you know that the CWA recognized and awarded the staff, our partner, the 4-legged stool, Orange County's Veterans Employment Program, otherwise known as VEEP, and they won, that's us, because we're in partnership, won the CWA Workforce Champion of the Year for efforts serving veterans in our communities. Very, very significant, very important. So this is the 2nd year running, a staff of the Orange County Workforce Development Board that we have won the statewide award. Second win in terms of public recognition is the 13th annual Turning Red Tape into Red Carpets Award from the Orange County Business Council, also for VEEP, the Veteran Employment Program. We were awarded an honorable mention in the category of business retention and expansion. This is essentially how do we get public-private partnerships working together, cut the red tape, and get more things done. If you're not aware, VEEP provides a variety of wraparound career services for active military who are near separation. That's a really important time, the right before the separation, certainly beyond that. who have recently separated and for their eligible dependents. So having that pathway for a soon-to-be separated military service member is really critical. That's a big change, and not managed well, it can end up in sad situations. Well, let's go ahead and continue with the happiness. The last award is a 2023 NACO Award for OC Micro Business Program. So this is the National Association of Counties, which awarded our OC Micro Business Program the Community Economic Development Award for 2023. Because in 2022, County Board, our group, the WEDD, which was a net policy, that's us, that's the team, developed an online application portal and leveraged our partners and resources to promote a micro business grant opportunity, which resulted in 1,470 grants, totaling nearly $4 million awarded to OC Micro Business. The program ran through 2020. Some of you may have sat on those sort of review panels. So let's give each other a round of applause. Y'all should be really proud of the work that you're doing. Real quickly, we are also going to invite 2 to 3 folks from the board, if you're interested, to join us to create an ad hoc committee to, and I know we just reviewed and revised the bylaws not too long ago, I think it was about 18 months ago, but there may be a need for us to do that. We've got a new crew, so if 2 to 3 of you would be interested in joining an ad hoc committee, we'll have to develop a plan and a timeline for that. Do let me or Nancy know, and thank you, everybody. Okay. That is it for me. Thank you again. I'll turn it over to your director's report. And we've done a lot of open discussions, and thank you for that. We'll continue to do so. Nancy.
Thank you, Chair. A few announcements for the annual filing of conflict of interest. That form is due in April for everyone here. The ethics training, I know some of you just took it, but might have to take it again. So if you were appointed, you have to take it prior to December 31st for the year you were elected or appointed, and then every even year. So if you were just appointed and took it in 2023, you still have to take it again in 2024. Thank you. For warm notices, I just wanted to share with the Pizza Hut layoffs with the drivers. That's something that your board is taking a lead on, since the headquarters is in Orange, and we're collaborating with all the local Southern California WIBs, workforce boards, to address the layoffs with the rapid response collectively. For RFPs, we just released a youth program RFP. The applications are due February 16th. And Annalisa has offered to be on our review panel. If you have an additional interest, please do reach out. We are going to be releasing our operator RFP, I think within the next week, and that will coordinate all the one-stop operator services. So we'll keep you posted on that. For the board, we currently have 4 vacancies. They're all in the business section. So if you have any referrals, I'm working on, so if you hand them to me, I'll work them hard and get them. We're looking for healthcare, IT, advanced manufacturing, and hospitality. So we do have some leads that we've been pursuing. I put together our staff some program brochures, which are in the lobby available for everybody. But if you should pick one up, on one side is all the job seeker services and the business services, just for your reference, available to everybody, not in fact. Okay. For the sets, we are in the process of collecting submissions from the cities for inclusion in the upcoming sets. And so we'll keep you updated on that process as well. We are currently processing for the 2024 updates to the sets. The regional plan, she mentioned, is due in March of 2025. Upcoming events, we have a District 3 Lake Forest Career Fair in partnership with the 3rd District Supervisor. It will be on the 21st, and I'll be sure to send you some information there. In addition to that, we have weekly hiring events, which I mentioned, and there's in the publicly available folder. There's some dates in there. That's it, Chair.
Wonderful. Thank you to the staff and to Nancy for packaging the information, I think, in a very powerful, digestible way. We're 3 minutes away from the journey. Are there any other discussion points? I just want to say thank you for being open. Please feel free to reach out if you have comments, thoughts, feedback about how we can continue to improve. And yeah, let's continue telling the story and have a great year. Let's see how we can partner together. I'm going to go ahead and adjourn this meeting at 11:58.
Thank you.
On time with the fire drill.
Yes.